Celebrating the power of possibility. Heller and Hilton Hill presents
Anything is Possible, Radio Edition.
Brought to you by Provision Cares Cancer Center, featuring proton therapy. One campus, one focus, cancer. Today, it's 15 for 15. A look back at the most powerful moments from the 15 seasons of Anything is Possible.
Welcome to Anything is Possible. I'm Haller and Hilton Hill, and thank you for joining us today. Muriel Rukeyser was the one who said this. She said, the world isn't made of atoms. The universe isn't made of atoms. It's made of stories. I can remember from my earliest childhood that stories moved me most, that one of the things that gave me hope for the future, or at least gave me a vision of what was possible, was the stories of people. So when we launched Anything is Possible, we are now in our 15th season. What I wanted to do was to harvest the stories that would put on display possibility and inspire new possibility. And that's what we've been able to do. This has been a great ride. And I love the title of the show. It's called Anything is Possible. Let me start with anything. I remember hearing the story of King Solomon. It was a story. Wisest man to ever live, but he wasn't always the wisest man to ever live. He actually offered 1,000 sacrifices. God showed up to him in a dream and said, you can have anything you want, anything you want. He said, really? He said, yes. And you know what he asked for? He asked for wisdom. Now, that story gave my mind this notion that anything was possible. It was a story that launched that. And here on Anything is Possible, we've told close to 400 stories of people who started with nothing and created something, anything, out of it. That's why we do what we do. We want to share with you the stories that inspire you to find your story and live it. So here's what we're doing in our 15th season. Something we call 15 for 15. I've asked my producer, Chris, to select 15 of some of the most powerful moments over the last 15 years. What we'd like to do is share these with you to prime the pump, if you will. Now, we've got a lot of original shows this year that I know you're going to thoroughly enjoy, but we want to take a look back at some of the big moments on this program. My benefit has been this, from that first story with Solomon in my life to the stories from this season. With every story, I think new things, I grow in ways I never knew that I could grow, I imagine new possibilities, and I am reborn. I was talking to one of the guys on our team, and he said, this is our revival week when we produce the show. It's when I come alive through your stories. So, I'd love for you to do something for me. First of all, take a look at these beautiful excerpts over the last 15 years. But then I want you to communicate with us. On the screen, you'll see our Facebook, you'll see our email, you'll see our YouTube. I would love to hear your stories of possibility. If you would take 90 seconds and just tell me a little bit about yourself, a dream, and then a dream come true, because I want to know your stories of possibility. Thank you for the rich opportunity to share stories of possibility with you so you can imagine your possibilities. And now, this week's 15 for 15. Five stories today. Take a look. Welcome to another edition of Anything is Possible. My guest today is Earl Lloyd. Thank you for coming to see me today.
It's my pleasure.
Heard you say this on a clip on the web. There's nothing wrong with being in the right place at the right time.
And the right people.
And the right people.
That's been my mantra. I've been fortunate, man. Every stop I made, every major stop I made, there was always somebody there.
The right person.
Who was concerned about my welfare, genuinely concerned.
Who influenced you more, your mother or your father?
If you listen to me talk for 5 minutes about that my home thing, you know who.
It was Mama.
Yeah, man, my mother, man, was like E.F. Hutton.
Really? When she talked?
When she talked, I mean, if you needed to listen. If you weren't listening, you better fake it real good.
What values was she trying to drive into you by being so intense?
The two staples. One, respect was always in style, and preparation. Mm. And there is no substitute for preparation.
That's big.
It's heavy, man. I mean, you know, I mean, this is coming from a lady, man, you know, fourth, fifth grade. She said, you know, she said, you can be the most talented person in the world, but if you can't show up to do what you're good at, you know, you're a waste.
I mean, you had a tremendous college career, but the thing you're noticed for is being the first black to play in the NBA. What was that like?
They definitely were not in a hurry to get to me. I mean, the ninth round, man, I'm telling you something. The ninth round, they probably had dartboards with the names on them.
Just throw.
Right, you know. But now here I am. I'm on a cusp.
Right here,
I'm on a cusp. I said, look, because this is the first time in your whole life that the playing field's level.
Right.
You're in training camp.
Right.
The basketball does not know whose hands it's in.
Right.
So if you got a statement to make,
you better make it.
Now it's time to make it.
What's your mother's name?
Daisy Lloyd.
So Daisy Lloyd is saying you better be prepared.
You got to be. You can't be as good.
You got to be better.
You got to be better. I know you heard that one.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's hey, we all had the same mother.
And somebody said, "Well, did you make a statement?" I said, "Making a team
was a statement."
Was a statement.
How much money were you?
Well, let me tell you, I think I was making like $5,000 a year. You know, when people say, oh, no, you bitter now, all this money they're making, I said, look, I am, and you take this for what it's worth. It pleases me to have been someplace early on that now a lot of these kids make this kind of living.
Anything is possible.
This episode of Anything is Possible is brought to you by ProVision Cares Cancer Center. One call, one focus, cancer. Call 844-455-8600 for more information. This episode of Anything is Possible is brought to you by ProVision Cares Cancer Center. One call, one focus, cancer. Call 844-455-8600 for more information.
Boxing's kind of been at the center of your world. How'd you get locked into boxing?
I took over the Golden Glove program in 1968, 69, somewhere in that area. Then immediately people began to knock me and said, well, you can't coach. How can you coach? You never fought. And I took that on the chin for a long time with my temper and my stature of life. And I finally said, wait a minute. A male gynecologist can't have babies, can they? Mm-hmm. They can sure deliver them. I said, I'll prove you people wrong. And I looked into the communities, and I didn't see any black athletes getting an opportunity at the university or anywhere else. And I said, I'm going to change that.
Talk about some of the names, some of the people, some of the boxers that you've had a hand in helping to shape and encourage and motivate.
Well, the greatest boxers were Clint Jackson, captain of the 1976 Olympic team, and Bernard Taylor, the captain of the 1980 Olympic team. And without question, Bernard Taylor was the greatest boxer I ever dealt with. Then came John Tate, and that was a major task, and he listened where others didn't. And he came before Bernard, obviously. And we went to the top with John because of his dedication, all the way through the World Championships.
You had run-ins with Don King?
I had a meeting with Don King, and John Tate, obviously, like any black fighter, wanted to hear what Mr. King had to say after he lost his belt. King called me the next day, and he laughed. And he said, I bet that Jew went home, didn't he?
What'd he
say? I said, he sure did. He said, that figures. He said, well, old Don ain't going nowhere. I've been trying to get you since 76, and you come see Don. So I told John, hey, you want to go see him? So Tommy Brooks and I drove to New York, and we camped out there all day long. We got there at 8 o'clock that morning. He got there at 8:30 at night. At 11 o'clock, I went into his office that night. When I finally went in his room, it was all mirrors, everything except a glass behind him. And I looked at him. I said, well, I'll tell you one thing, Mr. King. You ain't got no problem seeing yourself up here, have you? He laughed real big. He said, you like that, Ace? I said, well, I don't know. I had been told anybody had mirrors around them a lot of time had a big ego. And he said, well, I probably do. And he told his girl, don't answer the phone. So suddenly the phone rang. Now I told her, don't ring this in here. And it's 11:15 at night. Yeah, we got him. good. He deserved it. It was supposedly Lou Duva telling him that they had broke the Tomorrow's Champions that Bob Arum had through the courts. Now, that's about 11:15. Within 10 minutes, another call comes through, and I'm real suspicious now because he said, I told you, don't let, excuse me, Ace. Yeah. Yeah, Leon. Yeah. No, no, Leon, no, you're going to do the same thing. You're going to fight for $3,000 too. Uh-uh, Leon, everybody. Hey, Leon, listen, I know where you're at. Don't talk to me like that. I'll come down there, boy, I'll look you straight in the eye. This is supposedly Leon Spinks. So I now think I'm getting trapped. I said, ain't no way he's calling. Them guys is calling this late at night to argue with this man. And I didn't know, had me on the balance, but I can tell you this. Before I left that room, I wanted to fall in love with him. He is a master
really?
Salesman. But he's undoubtedly the crookedest human being I ever met in my life.
Everyone referred to you as Gentle Ben. How does a guy who seems so gracious, so gentle, so humble, how do you end up in the blood sport of politics, and how did you survive?
Well, God uses us in many special ways, and I depended on my faith to guide me in the decision I made, and I want to treat other people like I want to be treated. And plus my parents, my mother and my dad, were gentle people.
What is the most difficult political battle that you had to walk through?
Probably the battle on the income tax.
That was tough, wasn't it?
Took its toll because here I'm the floor leader of the governor.
You had to carry the water.
And we disagreed on that issue.
I remember you hearing about the income tax. If I remember correctly, there was a State of the State address coming up. Mm-hmm. And it seems, if my recollection is clear, that about 45 minutes before the speech...
15.
Was it 15 minutes? You get the word that this is in the speech.
Yeah.
And you were going to be in front of the press immediately after the speech as carrying the water for the governor on that. And I remember watching you just kind of, you took it in, but I can't see your temperature gauge even now, but it seemed to me that you just kind of stayed right here, but that seemed to be pretty frustrating to you.
Well, we had our discussion.
What does that mean? What did you say in that discussion?
I expressed myself more clearly that then there was no misunderstanding later.
I want to remind you of something you told me about raising your kids. We were in Nashville. I don't even remember what the event was, but we were walking down the hallway and I was talking to you about my daughter, who was very young at the time. And you told me that you found a recording and your daughter was practicing piano. And you heard yourself on this record. You remember this?
Yeah.
And on all the stuff that you had been through, all kind of political wars or whatever, when you heard that, can you kind of remind me? Because I took something from that big, that made a big impact on me.
Well, I realized I was impatient. She was trying to get my attention, and she was doing practicing the piano. She wanted to play a piece for me. And I put her off. But I'd had the recording set up as the first little recording device we'd ever owned, so she could hear herself play. And somehow she kept missing a note, and I was showing my lack of patience with her. At the time, it didn't hit me as much as later when I played the recording. And I still have that recording.
You still have it?
Oh, yeah. It's a good reminder. And I was being unfair to her for my own impatience, and that's a lesson I learned from it. And she's a talented singer, too, as well. And today, and she's the clerk of our session at church, very talented young lady. And our son, Jerry, was 3 years older than Cindy. But let me tell you what Cindy did for me one time. She's very sensitive about, and the whole family was, about it. Public life, and I was always concerned I'd say something that would embarrass them, but they were concerned about doing something that would embarrass me. But we had a difficult time, I think, in the income tax period. Anyway, I found a little post-it note on my computer that said, if God brings you to it, he'll see you through it. And it meant a lot to me.
Wow. And that's the truth.
Anything is possible.
This episode of Anything is Possible is brought to you by ProVision Cares Cancer Center. One call, one focus, cancer. Call 844-455-8600 for more information. This episode of Anything is Possible is brought to you by ProVision Cares Cancer Center.
Anything is Possible, Radio Edition. Radio Edition.
My guest on this episode is Knoxville Mayor Bill Haslam. Let's talk a little bit about your mom. You were 15 or 16 when she passed away?
16, junior in high school, December of my junior year.
Where were you when you got the word?
I was at school in a math class, and counselor comes in and says, you need to go home. And a vivid memory of driving home and passing the ambulance coming out of our driveway and knowing something's up.
As it was coming out of the driveway.
Was, yeah.
So when you walked in the door, what did you see?
Well, my dad was actually out of town. My brother was there and said, I have something to tell you, and told me that mom had taken a nap and hadn't woken up that day.
Wow. How did that affect you that day?
You know, I don't think it's, you know, when you're a 16-year-old boy, you're not, but you think you're a little bulletproof. You know, you're really not, but at that, you think, well, I can handle anything. And we have a great family. My father rallied everybody around and tons of friends. But you, looking back, it's like people tell you, you know, when your house burns down, you don't know how much you've lost at the time. It's only as time goes on, you think, oh, I lost that locket that my grandmother gave me. I lost the picture of, you know, my dad when he was a baby or whatever it is. And it's like that when you, particularly if you're a teenager, when you lose somebody, you have no clue how much you're losing for when you're, child is born or when you get married and all those times down the road when you think, boy, that'd be great to have my mother here.
Best part of being mayor?
Boy, the best part of being mayor is you really can make stuff happen. That's why I like the job so much.
What's something you've made happen that you're like, yeah, that makes a difference?
I think a lot of the things we're doing downtown and also the beginning of this whole South Waterfront project, I really think 10 to 20 years from now, the South Waterfront is going to change the way we look at all of Knoxville.
I don't want to be morbid, but when we come to your funeral, mine might come first, but when we come to your funeral, what do you want him to say about you?
He's still moving? No. I really do hope that they say he really was willing to give of himself in the end. Well, all of us have a natural tendency toward being selfish. I know I do. I think we all do. It's the one thing we all have to fight. And I think that at the end, I hope if they say, you know, he really was willing to give of himself, I'd take that.
And one of my favorite possibility people in the whole world is here today, Bobby Denton. And I want to start by saying thank you, because I've had a great career here in this market. And a lot of that has been because you put your chips on my marker. You absolutely believed in what I could do here. You believed that anything was possible. And I got to say, not only are we wearing similar ties today, and please notice at home, big dots, little dots. That's the way it always was. But I want to say sincerely to you, thank you. I have a lot of respect for you, but probably more than anything else, I love you. You are a phenomenal person in my life, and I really appreciate you.
I don't cry much, but that almost brought me to tears there. Thank you. It's my pleasure being here, and you were part of whatever success I had, a major part in it, I assure you that.
When did your love affair with cars start? Because you were racing cars.
I knew when I said I worked, helping my way with my drag racing habits. I worked at the Gulf Station on Magnolia Avenue and was around cars. I used to wash the K's ice cream trucks for Mr. Alexander and for Mr. Blevins. I was around cars all my life.
Did you want to be a NASCAR driver? Was that your aspiration? Did you want to be a professional drag racer, or did you just want great dates?
It attracted women. Yeah, I got Dolly Parton that way, so that was really good. Dolly tells a story about, when we dated, I didn't care anything about her. I just wanted to take her to the drag races.
So did you want to do it professionally?
I wanted to announce professionally, not drive, no.
So when did you end up in the announcer's booth?
I worked for a station, WSKT. In South Knoxville, I was there for a year, and then Claude DeGette hired me at WIVK. I went there. I did have a short detour in 1964. I went with Lowell Blanchard's son, Happy, to Jacksonville, Florida, and worked down there for 14 months. And then I came back. And Jim Dickin asked me to get, if I would work, would I come back? And I was dying for him to ask me that, and I said, sure. So I went to Jacksonville, loaded my stuff up, and came back and was with Jim Dickin, WIVK, for 38 years after that.
I understand that you started at the very bottom of the totem pole at the radio station.
Well, that's for sure, making about, I forget what it was, less than $100 a week, that's for sure. But Jim Dick gave us a great opportunity. I started at the radio station on the air 3 to 7 in the afternoons. And at the same time, I was writing copy when the copywriter was off because I wanted to learn how to do that. I wrote spots on the log, did the traffic when the person was off because I wanted to learn how to do that. Then from that, I got into programming and into music as a music director and a program director. And then I got in sales because I figured that's where the money was at that time. So became one of the top salesmen there. And then in 1982, when James A. Dick decided to step back a little, he moved part of the time to North Carolina, and he said, you're the man to take this thing and run with it. And then in 1985, he said, I want you to become a partner in our company, and we'll work the arrangements out on that later. And it was very beneficial to me, and he gave me every opportunity and was the greatest boss, the most knowledgeable person I've ever been around when it came to broadcasting.
Yeah, after 15 years, we've got some pretty great stuff, legendary stories. I've learned a lot about possibility. I hope you have too. Remember, no matter where you are in your life right now, no matter what age or stage you're at in your life, tomorrow is always a new possibility. And the first thing you have to believe is that anything, just about anything you can imagine is possible. Start with anything and work from there. We'll see you next time on Anything is Possible.